You're listening to Kill Radio. You know, I'm from Lawrence. Properly, I'm from near Oklahoma border, hillbilly world, but later we moved to the big city right outside Lawrence, where I enjoyed big sky country days, wandering on a bicycle on down country roads, dreaming always of New York City. Only later understanding that Lawrence would hold the key to the future. I moved to Lawrence, officially, after years of driving myself there, mostly alone, to see a lot of great bands while I was a kid in high school, to all-ages shows at Off the Wall Hall, Dead Kennedys, rough-and-tumble shows, It was my heaven. I was 18, went to the once then crumbling Lawrence Opera House. It was 1983. And I took my younger brother with me. It was BYOB and no IDs, so the kids were rocking in the balcony and the pit was a wild swirl, music blasting. Strangely peaceful. But it was Lawrence, all too groovy to be angry about anything. We wandered to the balcony to smoke some pot and hang with the best of them, and there was an old man with one famous companion I would later come to know, and two nubile boys sitting there like Edwardian prose. Can I go with William S. Burroughs? He's invited me to go over to his house. My brother was the most naive boy in the world, and I was driving after all, so I said no. He grumbled and hardly ever let me forget that. But of course, later he did appreciate my good sense. I smoked opium once in the mix with Mr. Burroughs in an antebellum old house on Ohio Street. This was the street, just down the hill from one of the most lovely campuses I'd ever seen. It was all frat boys and punk rock girls and philosophy majors and dropouts. And it was the most robust, earnest, determined group of people I had ever seen. I was a kid, and that was that. He told us stories in the blacklight room, pillows all over the floor, walls painted in lavender, I think. My companion Donna always left some guy, and I was stranded there like that for hours and didn't mind over matter. We always saw each other in the grocery store on Massachusetts Street, the main drag. He shopped at Dillon's. Ha! Always the cat fooled aisle with his wooden cane, always in a hat, kicking debris out of the way with his cane and grumbling about the whole situation. I loved seeing him, as did most anyone who knew who he was, which was most everyone. He lived across the street from my step-grandparents on a little old road of old farmhouses that once stood on the outskirts of town, now fully absorbed into the town. A little creek passed near his home. When visiting our step-grandparents, Craig would walk up and down the road just to maybe catch a glimpse of his hero. My brother's a writer indeed. We were leaning against an old concrete wall, a small bridge on the road over the creek, just standing there chewing a blade of grass. Did you see that? I squinted at the house. Did I miss it? I didn't see it. Craig said, the curtain on that window moved. Ha! Years later, I worked for an art gallery in Lawrence, just before my move to New York City in 1993, where we hung his show, The Shotgun Series. Seven Deadly Sins, I believe, is what it was called. I hung the show with the gallery owner and got lots of dozens of stories and interactions in between. I moved to New York City, and I never saw him again. Lawrence is not like any other place I've ever been to, and not a month goes by that I don't still entertain the notion of going back there, although my life is here in New York now. I can understand why he stayed there, although he had other homes he lived in throughout the world. He mostly chose to stay in Lawrence. Lawrence has had the first Native American four-year college in the U.S., something most all the citizens were very proud of, and Burroughs lived within blocks of that school. On the weekends, we'd all wake up Saturday mornings to that unforgettable sound of Indian drums softly beating, a pulse, an awakening, inspiring the warrior in all of us. It is a town that embraces insanity without judgment. A university town, extraordinaire, highly intellectual, yet down home and unpretentious. It was a place for a man like Burroughs to live, unencumbered, surrounded by hordes of silent, respectful fans. Murray Anderson, Dylan, and loads of other dignitaries came through town, and I was quite fortunate to be in a circle to meet so many great artists. I owe so much to that old man. XO, Ms. Cosmod. Thank you.
Awful small affair to the girl with the mousy hair, but her mommy is yelling no, and her daddy has told her to go, but her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view, and she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a sad thing for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools if they ask her to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Is there life on Mars? It's on America's tortured brow. Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow. Now the workers have struck for fame, 'cause Lennon's on sale again. See the mice in their million hordes, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. Rule Britannia is out of bounds to my mother, my dog.
Back in the 1950s, we started looking at the skies through radio telescopes. We started to realize that even objects like Jupiter emit light in radio waves. And if you tune a radio dish to the right color of radio light and look at the sky, you can find all kinds of cool objects. One of the common wavelengths to look at is about 20 centimeters. But there is everything from millimeters to many meters long that we can look at as we try to gain more information about all these objects. They started following these little point sources of radio light up with progressively larger telescopes and found that some of these points of radio light
were actually associated with points of optical light. But they were fairly faint, so they started looking with spectrographs. They were questioning what they were seeing. What type of star were they looking at? When they looked at them, they saw emission lines. They saw patterns of lines that didn't match any known type of star. There was a lot of head scratching. There were a few people who had made early claims that it was just something at really high redshifts. It took a while before someone was able to look at these lines and recognize the pattern of hydrogen. When we say something is at a high redshift, what we mean is that it is moving away from the planet Earth at an extremely large velocity. As a result of its motion, we see that the color appears to change and appears to move toward the red. This reddened part is just part of the Doppler shift. It's the same thing that affects sound when a fire truck passes your house and you hear the pitch appear to change. With quasars, these are objects that are billions of light years away. And some of them are redshifted 16%. That means that the color is 16% of what it should be. Some of these objects are moving 37 or 38 or more percent of the speed of light as you'd look at things further and further out into the universe. People started making guesses about that in the 1980s once we started to realize that these were objects at the center of galaxies. But the first supermassive black holes weren't confirmed until the mid-90s. There was a lot of talk between the mid-90s and the 80s where astronomers stood up and talked about the angry monster. That was the phrase they actually used in their scientific talks. The angry monsters at the centers of distant galaxies. They talked about how you could generate this with a black hole. There are actually a lot of different pieces of evidence coming out from many different directions. In the most distant parts of the universe, we had quasars with enormous brightness. Sometimes these objects would be 100 times the brightness of the Milky Way, all compacted into the center of a distant galaxy. The other thing that we knew was that they were capable, in some instances, of varying in brightness very rapidly. When you have rapid variation, that means you can't be dealing with a large object. One of the things that happens is if you take a light and you embed it in the center of a media, and you turn the light on and off, the light is traveling both toward you and backwards through the media. It's going to reflect off of the media and come back at you later. The first light you get is from when the light is originally turned on and it starts propagating straight towards you. Now you turn the light off and you're still going to be getting light for a little while. The last bit of light that you get is the light that comes from the furthest back edge of that object that hit the back edge of the object and then reflected back towards you. So people ask, how far away do you think we can see? They reply, well, the universe is 13.7 billion years old. And so that means we can probably see things that are 13.7 billion light years away in all directions. The problem is that the universe is expanding. We can see objects with light that have traveled a path that is 13.7 billion light years long, but the problem is the starting point of that photon that traveled 13.7 billion years isn't 13.7 billion light years away. Someone has done the math. In fact, it's been traveling much further than that. In fact, it's more like 78 billion light years away is where the starting point of that furthest photon that we're able to see started. So we can see a sphere around us with a 78 billion light year radius. So like 156 billion light years in a bubble. That's the size of the universe.
based on time. Now, time can be an awful lot of bother with the ordinary pinch-penny counting that has to go on with it. But if one can think of the structure as a space of time in which anything can happen in any sequence of movement events, and any length of stillness can take place, then the counting is an aid towards freedom rather than a discipline towards mechanization. A use of time structure also frees the music into space, making the connection between the dance and the music one of individual autonomy connected at structural points. The result is the dance is free to act as it chooses, as is the music. The music doesn't have to work itself to death to underline the dance, or the dance create havoc in trying to be as flashy as the music. For me, it seems enough that dancing is a spiritual exercise in physical form, and that what is seen is what it is. And I do not believe it is possible to be too simple. What the dancer does is the most realistic of all possible things, and to pretend that a man standing on a hill could be doing everything except just standing is simply divorced. Divorced from life, from the sun coming up and going down, from clouds in front of the sun, from the rain that comes from the clouds and sends you into the drugstore for a cup of coffee, from each thing that succeeds each thing. Dancing is a visible action of life.
get brighter every day, and every time I see you, scattered brightness in your way, and you taught me how to love you. And I know you belong to everybody, but you can't deny that I'm you. I know you belong to everybody, but you can't deny that I'm you. Oh, no. Oh, no. In the morning when I wake, I moor my boat and greet you. Hold your brightness in my eye, and I wonder, what does sleep do? For you get brighter every day, and every time I see you, scattered brightness in your way, and you taught me how to love you. And I know you belong to everybody, and you can't deny that I'm you.
I know you belong to everybody, but you can't deny that I'm you. You never understood me. You never really tried. Tonight I've been trying to mix the down home with the astronomical. On the chill room, here on killradio.org from poor Los Angeles.
Wondrous light, light. Light, lighter. You give all your brightness away, and it only makes you brighter. For you get brighter every
day. Brightness has been a theme too. The set list will be posted. Needless to say, it varied and rambled. From Jimi Hendrix and Sky Cries Mary and Whoppy Sounds and Merzbow and It's War Boys and Kate Bush and William Burroughs and Miss Cosmod. But what do you expect? It's a chill room. Thanks for listening this morning. And stay tuned.
You get brighter every day, and every time I see you, scattered brightness in your way, and you taught me how to love you. And I know you belong to everybody, but you can't deny I'm you. I know you belong to everybody, but you can't deny that I'm you. Krishna colors on the wall, you taught me how to love you. Krishna colors on the wall, you taught me how to love you.
Krishna
colors on the wall, you taught me how.
Krishna
colors on the wall, you taught me how.
Krishna
colors on the wall. every day.